Friends, this is Dr. Beter. Today is August 25, 1981, and this is my audio letter number 67. 20 years ago, on August 14, 1961, the world was shocked by the news from the divided city of Berlin. For years, East Germans had been flocking to the West by crossing from East to West Berlin. That flood was about to be stopped. A wall was being built to divide the two halves of the city. We watched in utter disbelief as the Berlin Wall was built 20 years ago. But, my friends, we learned very little. Today, new walls are being built to contain a people. But the people are asleep and do not see the walls. Once again, an entire people are being divided, not by physical walls, but by unseen divisions among their leaders. The country, my friends, is the United States, and the people are you and me. The most important walls of any dictatorship are not those built with hands, but those of the mind and heart. When walls are built that rob a people of information, they become vulnerable. And when walls of hatred shut out the ability to think, a people cease to be free. Slowly but surely, free channels of information in America are being snuffed out in important places. This month, on August 7, the Washington Star newspaper died after 128 years of publication. In past audio letters, I have frequently quoted the Star for just one reason. It was a far better newspaper than the Washington Post. It was more objective, better written, and in many cases, simply more honest. Now, Washington, D.C., supposedly the capital of the Western world, is left with only one newspaper. And that one is, at times, the handmaiden of the government, living on government handouts and CIA connections. The Post was not always that way, but today, that's all that is left in Washington. In effect, the people have been frozen out. With quietness and stealth, the United States government is taking on the overtones of two opposing forces at once, fascism and Bolshevism. The United States government is torn within by a gigantic power struggle. Which group will win is impossible to predict at this time. But both power factions have one thing in common. They both want to build the walls of dictatorship around you and me. My three special topics for this audio letter are: Topic number 1, the unexpected rebirth of an American gold standard. Topic number 2, the emergence of the Jewish question in America. And topic number 3, the Libyan dogfight and hidden naval war games. Topic number 1. The entity President Reagan is fond of saying in speeches, quote, "I was a Democrat longer than I have been a Republican," unquote. Likewise, his past heroes of the White House Oval Office are more often Democrat than Republican. And the hero we hear about most often of all from our actor president is Franklin D. Roosevelt. From the beginning, the so-called Reagan administration has been modeled along lines pioneered by FDR in the 1930s. Like FDR, the present administration tried to hit the ground running with big changes in federal policies. Now as then, the executive branch of the government is claiming a public mandate to flatten congressional opposition like a steamroller. And even though they look different today, the real issues now are once again the same as they were in the 1930s. Those issues are the crumbling economy, approaching war, and the political future of the United States. On the domestic level, 1981 is trembling with the hollow echoes of 1933. And yet, there is also one major difference today. In 1933, there was just one major power behind the throne, so to speak, dominating the United States government. Today, in 1981, there are two powerful factions who are challenging each other for governmental control. An enormous power struggle is going on behind closed doors, which has afflicted the United States government with schizophrenia. Policymaking has turned into a series of skirmishes between these two power groups. As a result, the government zigs and zags, this way and that. Top officials, such as the Secretaries of State and Defense, are always in a public tug of war. It all reflects the great power struggle behind closed doors. On one side are the corporate socialists of the Rockefeller cartel. Back in the days of FDR 5 decades ago, this was mainly an oil cartel. From there, it grew and diversified into a worldwide corporate socialist empire made up of multinational corporations. On the other side of the current power struggle in America are the state socialists, the Bolsheviks. Like the Rockefeller cartel, the Bolsheviks have collectivism as their ultimate goal. That is, both groups want to concentrate all wealth and power in a few hands, namely their own. But the Bolsheviks want to do it in a different way. The corporate socialists of the Rockefeller cartel want their own giant corporations to be the real masters of society. By contrast, the Bolshevik state socialists want the government to be all-powerful. Through the government, the Bolsheviks want to control the means of production directly through nationalized industries. For decades, from 1917 until very recently, these two collectivist forces had their own separate power bases. Rockefeller corporate socialism held sway in America, while the state socialist Bolsheviks controlled the Soviet Union. The two sides came in contact only on an international basis, and under those conditions, they operated as secret allies. But over the past 5 years, everything has changed. In 1976, the Bolsheviks were finally pried loose from control of the Kremlin by a determined band of native Russians. Their achievement was the result of 6 decades of tireless struggle, but it came as a shock both to the Bolsheviks in Russia and to the Rockefeller forces here. The Kremlin's new masters want no part of the international intrigues formerly carried out in tandem with the United States. They also want no part of the Bolsheviks. The Bolsheviks are being run out of Russia, so they are trying to use the United States as their new power base. This situation has brought the Bolsheviks into direct competition with the Rockefeller cartel for power over the United States and the world. In late 1977, I reported that a quiet new Bolshevik revolution was getting underway here in America with the help of the Rockefeller cartel. It was a desperate attempt by these two groups, formerly international allies, to join forces on the domestic level. At that time, both the Rockefellers and the overthrown Bolsheviks from Russia were preoccupied with staving off Russia's new rulers. It was a classic case of that old famous principle, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. What the Rockefeller cartel has learned instead is that sometimes my enemy's enemy is also my enemy. In early 1979, the Bolsheviks here launched an all-out drive to seize total control away from the Rockefellers. They did not quite succeed, as I detailed in past audio letters, but the Rockefeller cartel was grievously wounded. For more than 2 years now, the behavior of the United States has reflected one basic fact. That is, no one is clearly, decisively in charge. Instead, the struggle continues. In February 1979, I reported in audio letter 43 that, quote, soon the inevitable internal conflict here in the United States will be getting underway. On one side, there are the corporate socialists of the now headless Rockefeller cartel. On the other, there are the Bolshevik state socialists, unquote. My friends, it is this very internal conflict which is now showing itself daily in the behavior of the so-called Reagan administration. I can now reveal that the Rockefeller cartel, which was almost out for the count 2 years ago, has made a surprising comeback in strength. As of now, the Bolsheviks here continue to dominate America's foreign policy through their effective control of our military forces. But in the economic and political arenas, it is the Rockefeller cartel that now seems to have the edge. My friends, they intend to use that edge in some stunning stratagems intended to rebuild their own power. The power struggle here is starting to turn into a race against time. The Rockefeller Group lacks the power to simply finish off the Bolsheviks, and the reverse is also true. So each faction is gearing up to make the maximum use of its own areas of strength. In this topic, and topic number two, I will describe an economic and political 1-2 punch being prepared by the Rockefeller interests. If these things can be done fast enough, the corporate socialists believe they can blast the Bolsheviks here right out of the water. But as I will describe in topic number three, the Bolsheviks here have no intention of giving the cartel that much time. Before they can be stopped, the Bolsheviks intend to reach their own goal, nuclear war one. The economic surprise which I am about to make public will come as a shock to most Americans. And yet, it has already been foreshadowed by plans which I have previously reported on two occasions. First, there was the plan for a gold revaluation publicity stunt, which I reported last November 1980 in Audio Letter 60. America's alleged gold reserves are listed on Treasury and Federal Reserve balance sheets at the old official price of $42.22 per ounce. As you and I know, they do not in fact have a great deal of the gold which is listed. Those balance sheets are fraudulent, but the plan which I reported last November was for our non-existent gold reserves to be revalued at current market prices. On paper, that would make our gold supplies look 10 times bigger in dollar terms at current prices. The whole idea of the plan was to reinforce the false perception that America has a huge gold hoard. A few weeks later, the gold revaluation gimmick started to surface. For the first time in many years, a major article about the Fort Knox Bullion Depository was published. Through syndication, it was published all across the United States, as well as many other countries. As I reviewed in Audio Letter 61, the article referred throughout only to the market price of the gold. The old official price was totally ignored. The next element in the plan for an economic shock is the one which I first reported last April in Audio Letter 63. That item had to do not with gold, but with our currency itself. I am referring to the plan to do away with a $100 bill. When I first reported on the plan to eliminate the $100 bill, I received heavy mail about it. People were stunned, but I can report to you that the plan is still on track. In fact, since I first made the plan public in Audio Letter 63, at least one bill has been introduced in Congress to do as I described. In Audio Letter 63, I also invited you to send mailgrams to the entity President Reagan about our missing gold. Specifically, I urged you to challenge him to look into the discrepancy of 165 million ounces in the Treasury's own figures. Recently, I mentioned that I had never heard a single word directly out of the White House in response, and that's still true. However, I have now received copies of the letter which a number of you received. I thank you for sending them, and I feel I should take a moment to comment about them. In every case that I have seen, the response to your mailgram consisted of a letter from the Treasury Department. The letter begins, quote, "On behalf of President Reagan, thank you for your letter concerning an audit of the United States gold stock," unquote. The letter then describes a so-called gold audit, which is alleged to have been underway since 1975, on the installment plan. Enclosed with the letter is a copy of the latest report on this alleged gold audit. My first comment is that this letter and enclosure in no way answered the question you posed in your mailgrams. That question had to do with a glaring discrepancy of 165 million ounces of gold between two Treasury documents. Nowhere does a Treasury letter even refer to that discrepancy, much less attempt to explain it. So, fact number one is, neither the President nor the Treasury Department gave you the courtesy of an answer to your question. Instead, they tried to distract you by talking about something else. That something else, of course, is the alleged continuing audit of the gold. Too much could be said about that to go into details here. It's enough to say that the so-called recurring 10-year audit is a totally fraudulent arrangement using a different set of college students each summer for a few weeks' time, moving the same stock of junk gold in cell number 33 back and forth each summer. It is intended to perpetuate the bogus audit which was carried out just after the so-called gold inspection tour of Fort Knox in 1974. If you want to know more details, I refer you to my audio book talking tape recorded in March 1975. Its title is The Fort Knox Gold Scandal and What It Means to You. The point I want to make is that the alleged Reagan administration is only pretending to look for real cures to our economic problems. They are not listening to you, and they will not give a forum to anyone intending to reveal the truth about our gold supplies. Instead, the gold revaluation and $100 bill elimination are to be parts of an economic power play. My friends, our would-be modern-day FDR, the entity President Reagan, is planning to stun the world soon. He will do it by putting America back onto what will appear to be the gold standard. Late last year, Congress passed a law requiring that a federal commission be created to study the role of gold in our monetary system. But federal commissions are never set up in an uncontrolled or open-ended fashion. No surprises are ever wanted or allowed from a federal commission. Instead, the government first decides what conclusions it wants to hear from the commission. Then the commission is set up in such a way as to guarantee that the commission will recommend whatever is desired. That is what has been done with the Federal Gold Commission. Congress decreed last year that it be set up in time to produce its report by October 7 of this year. But after the new administration took office last January, the Treasury Department kept putting off creation of the Gold Commission. It did not come into being until June 22, and the first meeting of the Federal Gold Commission was not held until just last month on July 16. It was held behind closed doors, with no public observers, no witnesses to testify, and with no minutes kept. As with all federal commissions that matter, the Federal Gold Commission is a closed shop. It consists of four congressmen, three senators, three members of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors in Washington, two White House advisors, and four nominally public members. The chairman is none other than the Treasury Secretary himself. And to shepherd the group in the desired direction, the executive director for the study is another insider, Dr. Anna Schwartz. The small contingent of four so-called public members of the Gold Commission were handpicked for their known views about gold. Anyone who might have made real waves was carefully excluded from consideration. My friend Mr. Edward Durrell is a prominent example of this. Mr. Durrell offered to serve on the Federal Gold Commission entirely at his own expense. He would have brought with him massive documentation and more than a decade of intensive activity in the realm of our gold reserve. He would have brought true expertise about gold to the Federal Gold Commission. His appointment to the commission was highly recommended to the alleged Reagan administration by business leaders and even a few congressmen. But he was firmly rejected because he knows too much. Now that the hand-picked Federal Gold Commission is safely in being, it's supposed to make up quickly for lost time. Congress may be asked to extend the deadline to January 1, 1982, but even that would leave little time for making any serious study of America's monetary future. Fortunately for the Gold Commission members, its conclusions have already been preordained. Even Congressman Ron Paul, a member of the commission, is to be used, with or without his knowledge, to achieve these ends. Whenever the Federal Gold Commission issues its report, its recommendations are to set the stage for dramatic action by the President. Sometime in early 1982, two things will be done at the same time. One will be to abolish the old official price of gold, $42.22 per ounce, and let the gold price float. The other part of the announcement will be that Congress will be asked to restore gold backing for the dollar. It will be a 20% gold backing, as currently planned, based on the market price of gold. In effect, the dollar and gold will float together in international markets. But for domestic purposes, it will be claimed that this is a new gold standard, which will restore stability to the dollar. For the first time since 1968, there will be a governor or a break on the supply of dollars. My friends, this will be only a pseudo-gold standard, not a real one. You and I will not be able to walk into a bank and exchange a dollar bill for gold. Likewise, the international gold window, which President Nixon closed 10 years ago this month, will not be reopened. The effects of the Reagan pseudo-gold standard will only be temporary, lasting only a year or two, and even that assumes that there is no war in the meantime. And yet, it will be a masterstroke. For a while, it will alter the perception of the dollar. It will appear to be a powerful attack on inflation here in America. That perception will be reinforced by the elimination of the $100 bill on a separate occasion. Even though it will not be a true gold standard, its effect through the marketplace will be dramatic. In relation to the currencies of Europe and Japan, it will seem to make the dollar much more valuable to be bought and held. But don't be fooled. For a while, it will seem that the heyday of the so-called almighty dollar has returned once again. My friends, this will be an illusion, because the enormous damage done by inflation over the past 10 years will not be undone. It will only be arrested temporarily. For the average working man and woman, it may provide at most a temporary breather, no more than that. But for the corporate socialists of the Rockefeller cartel who are engineering it, the pseudo-gold standard will be a bonanza. Huge United States multinational corporations have issued hundreds of millions of dollars of debt instruments in Europe in recent years. They did this when the dollar was weak, with the debt payable in Swiss francs, West German marks, and other currencies, which were strong then. But now, as these debts come due, the dollar is being made strong again. This maneuver will allow those debts to be repaid in Europe or elsewhere in currencies which are artificially cheap. In this and other ways, it all translates into enormous profits for the Rockefeller multinational corporations. At the same time, the privately owned and controlled Federal Reserve Corporation has been creating record high interest rates in this country. That is creating vast opportunities here for the corporate socialists in two ways. First, Federal Reserve policies are creating a depressionary effect on American industry and business. Basic industries like steel, automobiles, and housing are being forced to lay off workers. Bankruptcies are spreading. Real estate, including farmland, is lost by owners no longer able to pay their debts. And businesses, large and small, are becoming vulnerable to takeover. It's a time ripe for mergers, as the giants swallow up their smaller rivals. Merge or die. Besides creating this vulnerability to takeover, Federal Reserve policies are also pouring in the money to big member banks to take advantage of the situation. So-called hot money from other countries is flowing into the United States in order to take advantage of the high interest rates here. That money, in turn, is recycled through the big banks to finance mergers and takeovers by the favored few giants. All of this will be reinforced by the so-called gold standard now being hatched by the corporate socialists. At the same time, the Bolshevik influence within the Federal Reserve and other critical financial areas has been reduced in recent months. The Rockefeller cartel is calling most of the shots at the present time in the economic realm. This is reflected in recent subtle shifts by the Federal Reserve Corporation with regard to struggling banks. The Bolsheviks here want to bring down the giant banks, which have long been a major source of Rockefeller power. But now, with the Federal Reserve Corporation is positioning itself to bail out any big banks endangered by defaults on giant loans to foreign nations. And a few days ago, the Fed also announced that it will provide relatively low-interest loans to savings and loans that are in trouble. The economic landscape is changing constantly, thanks to the infighting between the state socialist Bolsheviks and the corporate socialist Rockefeller cartel. There will continue to be surprises, which neither I nor anyone else can predict. But as of now, it is still the Rockefeller cartel that is primarily getting its way on the economic front in America. Even governmental policies are favoring the cartel as far as economics is concerned. Through the economic route, the corporate socialists are working fast to gather power away from the government and into their own hands domestically. They are working feverishly to make a reality of many parts of the secret new Constitution for America, which I first made public in 1975. Under their secret new Constitution, all industry would be controlled by the so-called authorities made up of the giants of industry. Governmental regulation would be done away with, just as the alleged Reagan administration is trying to do right now. Small businesses would exist only at the pleasure of the big, subject to licenses limiting their activity. In short, the real economic power of the country would lie in the hands of the corporate socialists. By mergers and other means, that is what is taking place right now. My friends, many of the maneuvers now being attempted by the Rockefeller cartel are derived from plans conceived long ago, but they are being executed today in an environment which was not foreseen. Today, the corporate socialists of the Rockefeller cartel are in a battle to the death against the Bolsheviks here. The Rockefeller group are trying to gather economic power to gigantic proportions here very quickly. If they do succeed in their drive for unchallenged economic power here in America, that will be the first big punch against the Bolsheviks by the cartel. It will lead directly into their second blow at the Bolsheviks, which will be in the political arena. Economic power translates into political clout, and if the Rockefeller group have their way, their political blow to come against the Bolsheviks here will be decisive. As I will describe in topic number 2, it is a Sunday punch designed to completely smash Bolshevik power here. If the corporate socialists are successful, America will be torn by internal convulsions far worse than the Civil War. But if they do not succeed, the Bolsheviks believe no one can stop their own plans for domination of America and eventually the world.